Welcome to this episode of Trick or Treat Me Right, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your Lopez lovers, Kyle Overkill, joined by my co-host, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. It was another scorcher here in San Diego, so I'm happy to be inside.
It's hot. Yeah, man, it's so weird because it's... Oh, was he... Is he cut out?
He was a little echoey.
He was a little quiet.
Oh, was I?
Yeah.
Sounds a bit like you're calling from Mount Doom.
Is this better?
Yeah, I mean, the echo's okay, because I can fix that. It just, you had cut out for a second.
Okay.
But, yeah, we, like, within, like, 3 days, and we just did the episode on leaf peeping comic book, and, like, my whole yard's filled with fucking leaves, but I don't know what to do about it, because I figured out that if you just, like, instead of raking them, if you just, like, run the lawnmower over them, they disappear. So that's gonna be my tip. I don't know how to be an adult and have a house, but I mean, that's bad news on top of some more bad news. Tim, I hate to do it to you, we did it again, buddy.
We're not gonna have time.
No, we're not going to have time. We're not going to be able to talk about the episode of George Lopez where George and Andy's practical jokes are funnier and scarier than ever as Halloween approaches, but as Benny's abusive comments and behavior grow worse, George finds it impossible to laugh at things and threatens to make some big changes. George finally steps up to his mother and tells her that he's tired of comments. We actually have a really good episode. We're going to be talking about a Halloween-themed book, so close, so you don't have to be too bummed, Tim, but we're going to be talking to creator Drew Edwards. But first, I'd like to thank you for joining us.
Howdy. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Yeah, I promised you it was terrible. But I was excited that I could pull a Halloween episode in.
Kyle, this is the first time in a while that you didn't have to ask how to pronounce someone's name.
I know. Yes. I'm appreciative, Drew, of your American-sounding name.
Well, actually, point of fact, the whole reason why my name sounds like that is it is it is not my family's original family name. My father on my father's side is he's part Cherokee, and somewhere along the line the original name was dropped for a more Caucasian persuasion sounding name, and that's how we ended up with Edwards. Alas, I don't know what my family's true name is, but I'm going to think that cosmically, everything that happened in history was leading us to this one moment, so you could easily pronounce my name.
Yes. Hundreds of years ago, when your family was looking for a new name, we said, I hope some, I was East Coast white male can pronounce my name correctly. And I thank him for that, because, yes, I generally... I mean, I'll always ask, but generally I'll forget and ask in the middle of the cast, but I will, like, sit and watch, like, YouTube videos of people saying people's name, and then, like, I obsess over it, and then I'll say it wrong, so I will thank your ancestor for making it easy for me, and I will thank Tim for calling it out. But if you are listening to this, obviously we're in the month of October, so actually we didn't... because we're usually terrible at planning, so but we end up doing a lot of horror books because I think that's a lot of skews towards me and Tim's interests. But very excited to talk about Halloween Man, especially kind of the anniversary issue. I think it's issue 25, but 20 years, correct, of this for you?
Yes. It's 25th issue of the Comixology series that we've been doing the last several years, and 20 years... since the inception of Halloween Man, originally as a webcomic, way, way, way back in the year 2000.
I know, I was looking, because I'm even familiar with it on Comixology, and I don't know at what point I became familiar with that. It was something prior, because you were on the Miller World forums or something.
I was. Wow. Yes, that's a blast from my past. I was very very active on the Miller World forums for many years. That's how actually a lot of my early like the people I collaborated with, like Nicola Scott and Sergio Calvé and Russell Hillman, who has been the editor on the book for a very, very, very long time. And I met all of those people on the Miller World. And those were some crazy fun, you know, I'm very nostalgic for those days now, even though that was a very difficult time in my life. Like the Miller World actually gave me a social outlet when I had a very difficult time making myself leave the house, frequently. And ironically, now I couldn't leave the house very much if I wanted to. So I guess we've come full circle.
It's so weird that now, yeah, I don't know what it's, I mean, obviously I think, you know, Twitter and Instagram are probably that, but like, I think in the past for comics, it was forums like that, or even, you know, like DeviantArt, which I think people still kind of use, but that was like the big, like, you know, find artists through DeviantArt or something like that. But yeah, it's kind of evolved, but I don't know. I mean, obviously Twitter is, there's the interaction and the, I guess maybe the, I don't know. I would imagine there's like a level of not friendship, but like kind of like what you would get out of a forum back in the day. But it's obviously broader. But
yeah,
you know, that's kind of been, I think that's kind of been lost outside of like maybe like Facebook groups or something to that extent.
Well, I mean, most Facebook groups I see are just people shouting at each other about the election. you know, like which there was some shouting at each other on Miller World. I'm not going to say like we would,
sure.
But it was usually about like if Superman could beat up, you know, Black Adam or something like that. It was never anything with real world repercussions. There was a lot of camaraderie, and I do think you were correct in saying that. You know, Twitter and Facebook and things of that nature have sort of, you know, like, look, if I want to talk about, like, we'll just give an example of like a esoteric topic like cryptozoology, or if I want to talk about obscure British horror films from the 1960s, I can make a post about that on Facebook, and I'm 95% certain that I can find somebody that will want to engage with me on that. And, you know, that's what message boards were. It was, you know, they allowed people to find like-minded people. And, you know, now I guess there just isn't a need for that anymore. But, you know, back in those wild and woolly days where the internet wasn't what it is now, you know, we had to find each other somehow, us geeks.
Right. I will always be thankful for the TY Beanie Baby chat room I found on AOL, where I was obsessed with feeding babies and finding out their value. And I found that AOL chat room where people talking about it, and then realized I was a young kid in a chat room. I don't know what I was doing there, trying to trade Beanie Babies with adults online. But I think one of the interesting things is, I mean, you allude to, obviously, Hollow Man is something you had built as a webcomic, and then have now really built up on Comicology with issue 25 coming out the 14th, which, if you're listening to this, it will be out. I think we're shooting for that week, so it'll be out. We're recording a little bit ahead of time, but and now we're seeing, obviously, we're all, well, the reasonable smart people are locked inside, and kind of that has affected the industry as a whole. And we've seen like this huge, I don't know how many Kickstarters I've backed this year. It's insane. For someone who's kind of been in that do-it-yourself online world, what has that been like, and kind of in the past and kind of coming to that, and then now really being at the forefront of it with, you know, this series on Comicology, has it been different for you at all now? Have you seen, like, has it gotten easier to release this digitally, like, to kind of even get the push behind it? Because I know, I have to imagine that's even tougher too, like, when having that push kind of as a book that's online at the moment.
You know, with web comics, they were such a new thing, there wasn't really any rules. I often compare it to kind of being the Wild West of the comic book industry. So no one was really knowing what to expect from that. And the flip side of that was there was no rules, so we could just do whatever we wanted, and there was tremendous freedom in that. The problem is there was, within a course of like a few years, the internet was just inundated with like tons and tons of webcomics, and some of them were great, but not all of them were, and it made it harder to get the attention of industry people, which is, you know, when you're trying to make a career out of this, that's what you want. And I was lucky enough to be on the ground floor of that and to kind of build up at least a solid fan base, you know, not, you know, there's definitely people that were more successful. Like I look at somebody like Scott Kurtz, you know, enough to where it was worth to keep doing it. And if I tried to do it as a print book, like the comic wouldn't have lasted a year, you know, like it's expensive to print a comic book. So, you know, doing a webcomic allowed me to build up a fan base to the point where when I did get around to finally printing stuff up, I knew that there would be people there to buy it. You know, so far as like the way COVID, you know, makes me reflect on that, I feel like people like myself were better prepared for what was coming than maybe people that were working, you know, and I'm not saying this to be dismissive of people who work for the mainstream companies, but like they do things a certain way, whereas like I'm used to always having my back up against the wall. I'm used to always having to think outside of the box, and I'm used to always having to push something that's not necessarily going to be in every single comic book store, like the latest Superman book or X-Men book. So, you know, I had to deal with a little bit of issues initially, like I had to reschedule some books, but I kept right on plugging and producing through this whole thing. And if anything, I think it has made it easier as far as people in the comic book news media. Like, it seems like they're like, oh, digital is a thing now. They take it a little bit more seriously than they did maybe 6 months ago, because they, you know, and maybe that is because like Marvel and DC are now like pushing that stuff a little more. But I kind of feel like the underground comics people got the last laugh when it comes to COVID, because there is a dismissiveness. I you know, sometimes I feel like, okay, I'm the comic book industry's Roger Corman, like the big two love the scalp talent from me, but you know, like you're never gonna, you know, thus far you've never seen me, like I haven't been hired to write like Ultimate Fantastic Four or something like that, you know, like, and God, I'd love to sell out and do something like that, you know. I'm tired of being punk rock at this point. Give me some money. You know, I feel like I came at this as prepared as I could be, because I had that experience of always having to figure stuff out on my own. And, you know, we've put out a new comic every 2 weeks since August. You know, there was a bit of a gap. We had a two-part Valentine's Day special that was originally supposed to be all in February. And then everything hit, and you know, you didn't see that out, the second part of that out, but for second month, like for several months. But once we got over the hurdle of that, like we were boom, 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 let's head to this 20th anniversary thing. Because the other thing is I knew I wasn't going to, you know, COVID or not, you know, like I knew I wasn't going to get a second chance at having a 20th anniversary. Like I have, as an underground comic book, I have lasted 20 years. That's an accomplishment that's worth celebrating, and by gosh, I really wanted to do that. So I had no choice but to keep plugging along.
I mean, like you said, I think this is obviously an amazing accomplishment, I think, for any comic, but again, kind of that's, like you said, this comic that you ostensibly built up on your own and built out this character and this world and kind of allowed people to inhabit it. And really, again, like, I mean, the amount of artists and people you've worked with on it and been able to collaborate with has been amazing. And like, I even went back, I was like looking through as many like kind of old interviews as I could find and things like that. And I mean, I think before maybe we talk a little bit about the issue itself, like, you know, 20 years for you, where, like, kind of like looking back less on the series itself, but you kind of as a creator, and now, like, what's been the biggest difference for you, like, especially when you went in to write this specific issue, kind of reflecting on that?
Well, you know, as a writer, like, look, when I wrote the very first Halloween Man story, I was 18. I was right out of high school. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, like, I wrote these big Chris Claremontian, you know, soliloquies, you know, with characters that had speech bubbles that were pulverizing the art. You know, but that was, like, the punk rock part of it, you know? Like, I was going to learn as I went along. And didn't really have any formal training as a writer. It was all self-taught. Now, you know, I think I have a certain amount of control over, you know, I've developed a style, you know, and I think if you were to stack one of my stories next to somebody, like let's just say like somebody like Mark Wade, like put a script that I wrote next to Mark Wade, I think but you did put the name on it, I think people would definitely be able to tell you who wrote what, you know. Like I have become, I don't want to pat myself on the back too much because I'm still always learning new things, but I think I've become a reasonably good writer, you know. I certainly think more about the art of writing than I did at 18. And at the same time, when I started this project, I was dealing with some very high stakes emotional stuff, which was the death of my twin. And if I had not started doing this comic, I might not be here today. You know, I often say this comic saved my life, and it did. It gave me something to get out of bed on. So like when I came around and I was like, okay, 20 years of this to write this script, you know, I reflected on the emotion of that, like how this comic has helped me get through some of the worst things that life could possibly throw at you. And you know, I don't want to give away too much, but like, you know, at the end of the issue, I wanted to make sure that Halloween Man Solomon, you know, he's kind of a broody guy. Like, he's a funny guy, but he's kind of a broody guy. And I wanted him to end on kind of you know, often there's bittersweet in the comic. I wanted something to have a legitimately sweet note. To give the character something, because he's given me a lot. You know, he's allowed me to cope with mental illness. He's allowed me to cope with death, divorce, all other things that you don't think that you're going to deal with when you're 18 years old. And you know, so this issue in a lot of respects was kind of a gift to the character of Solomon Hitch. Like I wanted to give him something back for helping me survive.
And that's, I guess that kind of leads into the next question, because it does very much feel like a, you know, a celebration of the character, but also a lot of the, I think the like boiled down kind of, joy of what the comic kind of really sells, like the kind of homage and love you pay to not only horror, but I think a lot of, like, you know, I don't want to say maybe not golden or silver age heroes, but kind of like the hero-esque, like, comic book superheroes, but, and then the humor and everything kind of else tied in with, like, even sci-fi tropes. Like, I think it very much kind of was like a love letter to what this series is and the character is. Going in, like, I mean, you, like, was this something you were always kind of, as it got closer, like, knowing what you wanted to do for this specific story? Was it, because then, I mean, you're still telling, like, your ongoing stuff, and is this mixed in with the issues themselves? Like, is this something you knew early on you kind of wanted to approach differently, and then how that was going to turn out when it came to that?
I knew I wanted it to be a standalone story, and I knew I wanted it to have something folkloric about it. For a long period of time, so early on when I first started doing the web comic, there was a reviewer that very unceremoniously, very kind of cruelly called the comic, and I think I might not be saying this exactly right. I'm paraphrasing something that is now probably 20 years old, but they called it a poor man's version of Hellboy. So my reaction to that was to never read another Hellboy comic, was to purposely avoid like any tropes that Hellboy would use. And the problem is that Mike Mignola and I probably have a lot of the same interests. And you mentioned like Golden and Silver Age comics, but also folklore. And because of that, I just stopped doing folklore stories. And I got to be in my four I'm now in my early 40s, and I started to think, like, you know what, that's kind of stupid. Like, I love this stuff. I have books all over the place on this kind of stuff. I want to do that. And specifically, I kind of also wanted to riff on the idea of, holidays, specifically Halloween and Christmas, as far as this story is goes. So, like, there's a lot of Halloween folklore and Christmas folklore, because the villain is a Christmas-based villain. And the way those two things rub up against each other, and how they're alike and how they're not alike. And that was definitely, if I don't want to sound pretentious, but the idea of doing something that was a little operatic and a little mythic was really what I wanted. And I hope we accomplished that. I think we did. It's if your mileage for Germanic Christmas trolls may vary, so we'll see. But it's it it, it I also knew that I wanted to include as many characters from the mythology that I've made as possible. So, there is a certain crammed to the gills quality to this story, but I think that's what you do when you're celebrating 20 years of something. It's a crazy quilt of a comic. It really is, but I am happy with how it all came together, and I hope that people I hope it's a good entryway if you've never read it before, but I also hope it's something that if you have been reading for a long time, that you feel rewarded by some of the review. There's some status quo changes in this, and I hope people who have been reading it a long time can take something from it.
Yeah, that was my th I mean, the kind of, classic Marvel idea that, every comic is someone's, first comic or something like that. And obviously I think, the great aspect of Comicology is a lot of times it's a great place for people to discover comics, and that's, probably one of the biggest takeaways I've gotten over from Comicology over the years, is that it's like you can go on there, you can just search for hours, and you can find something new and stuff like that. Is that always in a thought in your head when you're writing it, kind of understanding new readers, old readers? But then, I mean, like you said, going into this, kind of the idea that, like, you want to really, have it be a payoff for people who've been with you along the way, understood the growth of the character, kind of where Solomon was, where he is, where, and like you said, kind of alluded to the end, I think is a nice, like, kind of nod and culmination and aspect of that. Is that something you're always kind of aware of, especially being on Comicology, that this might be something someone would pick up and get into? Do you have to kind of write to that, or at least write being aware of that?
I try to be as new reader friendly as possible. You know, at the beginning of every issue, we do try to include like a lowdown over who all these crazy characters are. But aside from that, you know, for the most part, I have focused on stories that are single or, you know, at most maybe, you know, two parts. You know, there's been a few things that have gone three parts, but, you know, I try to keep that, you know, I look a lot at Will Eisner, what Will Eisner did with The Spirit, and Will Eisner never put a lot of fat on the Spirit comics. I always think of, like, there was one Spirit comic that I opened up, and the Spirit is, like, chained, you know, he's got chains all wrapped around him, and he's been tossed out of the plane. And that's how it starts. And you're just thrown right into the story. And, you know, I'm not maybe as head-snapping as that. But, you know, I do try to, you know, if somebody's, like, picking up something for the first time, I do try to say, okay, you know, you're going to get as much bang for your buck as you possibly can. You know, like, if this is your first time reading this, I'm going to show you why these characters live in a fun world and that their story is worth following. Now, I will say this. With the anniversary issue, what you're gonna see is a lot more story arcs moving forward, and, you know, not just story arcs about Solomon and Lucy, who are the main two characters, but, you know, some of the side characters are gonna get more fleshed out and things like that, because I've built up this world. I've taken the time to build up this world. Now I really wanna, you know, take the toy box and play with it. And, you know, there's people who read the comic now for characters that aren't the main characters. You know, like, inevitably is what happens is you have characters that are side characters that become, you know, very popular with certain people. Like, for example, we have a character named Bella who is trans. And I know there is a lot of people, that's a very meaningful representation there. And so we're going to give that character their own story, you know, in 2021. You know, Mango, who's been with the comic as long as they possibly can, you know, like all the way back to the webcomic days, you know, he's a very popular character. We're going to showcase him in some stories of his own, you know, like it's that sort of, you know, now let's really see what we can do moment that I think that we're at now.
I was, like I said, doing kind of in research. I like to go back and look at, like, a lot of interviews because, like, I like doing, but at the same time, then I feel like I, like, overthink things when I'm doing it because I'm like, oh, I don't want to ask the same question even though it might have been, like, 10 years ago or something. But I was looking at a Comics Bulletin interview you did, maybe...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, 2007. And one of the things you talked about, honestly, was, like, you kind of admitted or talked about, like, felt you failed in kind of building up the secondary cast and giving them a chance to shine. But that's what... I was reading that and then rereading this issue before, and, like... I think that's something you do extremely well is kind of building the characters out and making them really be a part of it. And, like, you know, obviously Solomon has his time to shine and his moments in it, but, like, I think it is really, he does best when he's, like, you know, juxtaposition of all these people and these personalities and this, like, almost like family he has. I mean, is that something you feel like you, I will say you do, but do you feel like you do, better job of now versus Drew from 2007?
I definitely think I do better now from where I was at 2007. And first of all, you are very good at your research. You should pat yourself on the back that, like, these are good questions. I do think I do better now. There's a couple of characters that I feel like still need some more TLC, but that could just be me being critical. You know, every writer, every creator, they're always their worst critic. You know, Nicodemus, you know, I always feel like I want to develop him more because I think he is the character out of every character in the comic that I am probably the most like as a person to a degree, because he's a, you know, a geek like me. you know, I think, you know, there's some characters where I'm kind of careful not to show too much until I'm ready, like Morlach. The sorcerer character, he has an abundance of personality, but you don't really know a whole lot about him. And I think he's one of those characters that until I'm ready to really show that, I think it's probably good to just kind of keep him, you know, sliding in and out of the story. But I am glad that you feel otherwise from me. You know, like I hope that, you know, it's something when I feel that way about me, it's something that I'm always inside like, well, I hope I'm wrong, because like when you write something, you're inevitably too close to it to formulate an unburdened opinion. You know, like you're going to bring your own, you know, anxiety and your own ego, because like there's definitely stuff I think I do well. But you know, I do think I do, you know, better with the character development than I once did, because, and if you're not getting better, if you're getting older and you're not getting better, you're doing something wrong.
Well, and again, a good testament would be, you wouldn't be doing your 20th anniversary of this character. I think it's obviously a testament to the quality and your ability to grow and continue to put out great material. And I think another thing you do extremely well, and I think is more difficult maybe than I think people consider or something like that, is writing with different artists to their strengths. And then like this issue itself has like a ton of artists on it, kind of doing a lot of duties. Is that something now, as a writer, even as the series progressed, like, are you aware kind of who you're writing to, especially art, especially with a series that is so kind of like, you focus a lot on kind of tone and atmosphere throughout it, and that really kind of being a setting for it, especially in this, like, I like that, you know, there's, you know, branching paths, like the team split up and there's kind of two different moods established that way and then coming back together. Is that something, as a writer, writing to different artists, is that something you're aware of kind of who you're writing to?
Well, with this script, when I was younger, I just wrote the script and the artist who got assigned to it was the artist who got assigned to it. And as I've gotten older, I have, you know, and I have more of a stable of people to choose from. You know, I would be like, okay, this person would be good for this script. However, with this story, I wrote the script, but then when I started pulling artists, because I almost entirely, with the exception of Max Young, who is one of the artists on this, it was almost entirely people that I had worked with before, and I kind of had an idea of who would do well on certain pages. Like, for example, like John Souter, who opens it, has a very kind of moody, sort of almost EC Comics kind of style. Mm-hmm. And the opening of the comic is more horror-based, so I had him do that. Whereas, like, Evan Quiring, who does the sort of side story, which is the Lucy story, he draws great women, and he's drawn Lucy before. And I was like, okay, he's going to handle that. And, you know, I also had, you know, Sergio coming back, who has drawn more Halloween Man stories than anyone. And I really wanted him to do some particular pages that I can't say which because they're spoilers. But, you know, there were some certain pages that were really important to me that I wanted to have somebody that had that long history. Just how, like Nicola coming back and doing the cover. You know,
it's a great cover.
You know, it's a beautiful cover, and having somebody that has that history, you know, really was important for certain particular parts of it. And, you know, I made the quilt comparison before, and I'm going to keep making it. I view this comic kind of like a quilt, you know, like I wanted it to be something, you know, it's fall. It's starting to be a little colder outside, even here in Texas. And, you know, it's something that you could read and enjoy inside your home, as we all are. But, you know, and it would be something that might chill you a little bit at the beginning, but, you know, you know, it would also warm you a little bit. And the way the art is supposed to flow together, again, if I may sound pretentious right now, and I apologize, but the way the art is supposed to flow together is supposed to have that kind of effect. It's supposed to be warm when it's supposed to be warm, and then it's supposed to be chilly when it's supposed to be chilly. And I think we have achieved that. I'm very proud of the way it all came together.
Yeah, I think it's something you've done well, and specifically in this issue, it shows that off. And there's some amazing art. There's a panel where two things are on fire, and it is maybe my favorite panel. I don't want to spoil it. Holy shit, that's so good.
Well, that's John Gulson's work, and yeah, he's a very talented gentleman. If it's the panel I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I'll cut it if it's what it's the what are they called? I'm trying to blank on it. They're like the werewolf. They're not werewolves. They're,
the Perchten. Perchten.
Yes,
they're trolls.
They're on, and it is. It looks. It reminds me of that Superman comic. His first one is that Action Comics. It's the one where he's smashing the car. And
Action
there's
Comics
that I was
one. Yeah.
Yeah, there's always the guy screaming who just can't, he just can't handle what he's seeing. That's so good. I think with this series and with this character, and again, something you kind of allude to a lot is the range of interests that come into it. Like, I mean, obviously the horror, but, you know, I do think there is like a love letter and kind of what you've done over the years with different stories, and even a lot of the stuff you've done specifically with Lucy is like more of like the sci-fi and like, you know, classic like sci-fi, but I feel like there's like noir, like there's like tons of range of influences you're kind of pulling from. Are there specific things, maybe more so in horror because it's Halloween time, that are, I don't want to say tropes, but kind of the aspects of the genre that you like to pull from for your series in particular? Just, is there stuff with Halloween Man and Solomon that you like to use that you find specifically kind of in the horror realm?
So with Solomon, you know, like he has a lot of the universal monsters in his DNA, you know, Frankenstein and the Wolfman and, you know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, that sort of like tragedy, but with nobility to it. And, you know, I think, you know, that's because for me, that's always what I gravitated to with characters a lot of the times. You know, even my favorite, you know, traditional superhero is the Thing from the Fantastic Four. And he really has a lot of that in him, too. I think also in terms of like the tropes of the character, his primary ability is resilience. You know, he's invincible, he's immortal. He's very tough to injure, he's impossible to kill. And that goes back to, you know, I'm an 80s kid, and you know, that goes back to characters like Jason Voorhees, who always seemed to like pop back up no matter how many times, you know, you could chop him up, stick him in a blender, you know, throw him at the bottom of the lake, and he'd still pop back up in the sequel. So, you know, those are a lot of what we, you know, it's the idea of somebody. Solomon doesn't just look like a monster. Like, there's tons of characters in comics that look like monsters. You have characters like Blue Devil, I just mentioned the Thing, there's also the Beast and Nightcrawler and so on. Solomon actually is kind of cursed. You know, he actually has to, you know, he eats people. You know, I never wanted the character to be, you know, I wanted him to be, you know, like somebody people could root for, but like I often think back to the original King Kong, you know, the one from the 30s, whereas like Kong is this very sympathetic character, but he's also, you know, picking up sailors and like chewing on them and, you know, breaking dinosaurs' necks. Like he wasn't safe. And, you know, Solomon, who is, I think, in his heart, kind of a sweetheart of a guy. You know, I think he wants to do good, but there is this other side to him that, you know, no one should ever really be that comfortable, despite, you know, how many people, you know, the makeshift family he surrounded himself with, all this stuff. Like, you know, he is a thing of fear. You know, I really wanted to make sure, and it's, you know, it's again going back to that universal monsters thing, I really wanted to make sure that you had that duality of, you know, like, under a certain set of circumstances, this guy could be the villain. You know, like, he's the hero of this story, but, you know, like, he isn't a safe hero. You know, he isn't, you know, as much as I love the thing, he isn't the thing. The thing just looks like a monster. Solomon really is. And in part of that is, you know, that's kind of rooted in, you know, some real world horror. It's rooted in survivor's guilt. It's rooted in post-traumatic stress. You know, I don't want to throw myself too much of a pity party on your podcast, but, like, you know, I talk about the car accident earlier that killed my twin brother. You know, I have had a lot of psychological fallout through that. And putting that sort of energy, that universal monsters energy, into Solomon was my way of coping with that, because, like, I felt ugly. I felt like a monster. I had killed my best friend, you know, even though technically the accident was not my fault. I had this extreme guilt. And so, you know, putting that into the character, you know, the fact that he wants to do good, but he's also kind of dangerous. It was my way of working through those feelings.
And I think that's a really great moment in this issue that you kind of, again, I'm spoiled, but you play with towards the end with him, and kind of the allure of that being something to him, and then kind of the where that goes. But that is always in. I mean, that's, I think, a lot of the interest around those characters that I like that you said, the universal monster. Like, that's always been the interesting thing about, like, Frankenstein's monsters. Like, the, you know, he appears to be someone to fear and hate, and he is, but at the same time, he's, you know, struggling with that. And those are always, I think, a lot of the interesting characters that kind of struggle with that. But that doesn't necessarily mean, like you said, they're not safe. But so there's the built-in tension of that. Like, not only can you play with, like, who they are as characters, but there's still the tension of them being monsters in actuality.
Well, I mean, there's that pathos with Frankenstein.
And I always loved that. I thought that was, like, the perfect, you guys did the story with Hack and Slash. And
yeah,
that was like, you know, I always thought, found that was, like, the interesting thing with Hack and Slash is, you know, that's something, you know, Tim dealt with, I think, a lot in kind of the horror genre, was, like, obviously the Final Girl, but, like, struggling with that a lot is, you know, characters in those worlds, their motivations, and, you know, where that takes them versus, like, you know, should they actually be trusted or stuff like that. That is always interesting, kind of the approach to a complicated hero, like the Thing, but where Halloween Man is actually, you know, dangerous at times.
Well, I think, you know, and you brought up Hack, you know, the Hack Slash crossover. I think when you do characters that exist within, you know, the horror genre, or, you know, at least, you know, have their toes dipped into that world, no matter how quirky or lighthearted things might seem, there's always going to be this touch of darkness to it, because you're dealing ultimately with the idea of, you know, being the other, you know. So most of these characters that we're talking about, you know, and definitely Cassie Hack is also that, is, you know, people who are on the fringes of society. And it's tremendously freeing, but at the same time, it's also awful at times. And I think, you know, that's why that crossover was fun to do, is because I was able to kind of play with how the characters were alike, but also how they were different. And it is really, I think, you know, when you think of like your traditional superheroes like Superman and Batman, and those are characters that I love, like that's not necessarily something they have going on with them, and which isn't to say that you can't tell cool, complex stories for those characters. You can, but it's not necessarily going to have the same appeal as these characters that have that touch of horror to them.
Right. Before I have like a kind of final S question, and then Tim has his final question, but I think, again, kind of the aspect of it and of this being the anniversary is kind of a lot of what I felt like I focused on, and I feel hopefully that's okay. But like when readers come to this issue, again, whether they've been fans throughout this time, or maybe they've come in recently or picking it up, like what do you, for you being so invested in it, and again, kind of where the comic has been for you as an outlet and as something to kind of throw yourself in, what do you hope readers take away from their experience with this issue, but maybe kind of as their experience with the series as a whole? Like, what do you hope people are taking away from the book that you write?
You know, I think if there was a mission statement to Halloween Man, it's that it's okay to be different. It's okay to be weird. It's okay to be broken. You know, it's you know, something I think we all feel from time to time, and some of us feel it more deeply. But I made this character, you know, because of how I was feeling, and what I found is I've had people, you know, come to him and they bring their own, you know, perspective, you know, that's a different take, but, you know, also kind of the same in terms of like, I feel like I am, you know, different from other people somehow, but, you know, this, you know, I can still try to do something good in this world. I can still find a place that I belong. And I think in 2020, that's a very valuable message, because there's a lot of people that are being told that they don't belong. And I want people to maybe find, you know, something in this character that makes them feel empowered, and that can make them feel like, okay, you know, I can find family, I can find love, I can find purpose. And, you know, because that's what it's been for me. And if they've never read Halloween Man, you know, I hope that, you know, they look at this issue and go, I want to go find out more about this character, because even at 20 years, we're still trying to find new fans. You know, we're always trying to reach out to new people.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm sure you don't want more people to buy your comic book. That's one thing I've learned from talking to creators, is they don't. And I will say, like, as an issue itself, I think it's fantastic. I think anyone can pick it up and read it and have fun with it. I think it's like 71 pages total. Like, it's a lot.
It's a big
you're getting
book.
In there. Yeah, and it's just like, again, and I think it's a series that if people read, we'll get into. But you know, as we talk about it, I will say it's fantastic. It is a great issue. There's so much amazing art in it, and again, the idea of, especially now when we're with these, again, a lot of people producing independent comics, and it is kind of a boom of that. I think more so now, to have something that's been 20 years and continues to persist in itself is an amazing achievement. And I think when you read this issue, like number 25 of it, like it's clear, you know, why it's been that way for you. So I think, again, obviously congratulations. And it's, I think as our listeners, hopefully if you haven't read it yet, go read it. It's, like I said, it is well worth your time and it's fantastic. So now a selfish question for mine. If anyone also didn't know, Drew, like you said, you mentioned it, you do a podcast, Castle of Horror. We are in Halloween time. I will watch them all year round, and I don't know if it was on cast or off. I will just sit in my office and watch horror movies. But for listeners, what would you recommend for this Halloween season? Some key ones or new ones? What are some things you're going to be watching this season?
You know, I always go nostalgic during the Halloween season. I watch a lot of stuff from, you know, that I like to watch when I was a kid. So, you know, a lot of, you know, I just mentioned Friday the 13th. A lot of the Friday the 13th movies. Obviously, the Halloween franchise, that's a no-brainer. But also, I tend to go pretty old school. I'll watch a lot of Hammer, you know, Dracula's and a lot of the Universal monsters that I was just name dropping. You know, I think it's hard to get better than The Bride of Frankenstein. That's like a perfect horror film as far as I'm concerned. And the, you know, the Wolfman is, you know, obviously the you know, one, like the trope codifier of many of the things we associate with a werewolf genre. Ghost movies are great during this time. You know, it's during the time that we think of, you know, the veil between the living and the dead being thinner. So I think ghost movies are tremendously good to watch during October. You know, in particular, I think The Haunting, the original, not the crappy remake, and the Legend of Hell House are two of the best ghost movies ever made, and I think they're both streaming on Prime right now. So I think that's great. I also think you know, that's a little more obscure, but Burnt Offerings is a tremendously good haunted house movie, and it's a little, you know, kind of an underloved gem. You know, if you want more monsters for your buck, you know, Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein is great.
Oh, so good.
And, you know, if you want to go 80s with that, there's obviously Monster Squad, Wolfman's Got Nards. You know, that's a tough one to beat, too. You know, Waxwork is also great. Also 80s, also lots of monsters. Not a horror film, but definitely tremendously influential on Halloween Man, and has a horror vibe. But Dark Man is a great movie to watch during October. So, yeah, those are all stuff that I'll probably be busting out this October.
Yes, I'm so glad you said Monster Squad. I've been for a lot. Like, I grew up with the understanding. Maybe because, like, I don't know how old I am. I should probably know that. 33, 34. I just had a birth, so I have no idea. I always, like, to me, maybe it was just because I saw it on TV and it's always, like, stuck with, like, Monster Squad was, like, I always thought it was, like, the level of Goonies. Like, I watched Goonies and I was like, this is garbage. Like, I was like, Monster Squad is, like, the better Goonies. So then when I, like, got older and people were talking about Goonies, I was like, well, we're talking about Monster Squad, right? And it was like this, like, weird, like, I was like, I didn't know Goonies was a thing. I thought, like, Monster Squad was, like, the thing. But it is, like, the better, like, kid adventure movie. I showed both to my 7-year-old, and I was like, this is what we need to do. And he agreed. But
you're doing it right. You're doing it right.
And I will, like, go, like, so when my wife wanted a house. She's like, we need to get a house. We have kids. Like, she's tired of paying her rent, all this stuff. So I was like, all right. But, like, it's like, we will, so we figured out a way to, like, get land and, like, build a house. Because that was my thing. I was like, I will live in a house for a long time, but I don't want it to be haunted. I don't believe in ghosts, but I don't want to take the chance of that. So I was like, we will get a house built. But then, so it's like in upstate New York. It's outside of Saratoga, and we live like two blocks over from the battleground where like they cornered the British and they surrendered. So I was like. I was watching like movies like pulled. I'm like, so like we're built on top of it. So I'm like, if there's like dead soldiers under like died, like I'm like, are we safe? I don't know. But all great choices.
There's a great quote from Alfred Hitchcock that I always think is the perfect thing to say about ghosts, which he said, "I don't believe in ghosts, but I am afraid of them." Yeah, and I think that is perfectly valid.
Yes, I would agree. Like, I don't believe in any sort of, like, religion or anything that I would scientifically do not believe in it, but I was like, I would rather, I don't want to take my chances in case I'm wrong. So, I will always be.
I never understand those guys who go scuba diving in Loch Ness, even though I don't particularly believe in the Loch Ness monster. But, you know, why chance it? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and maybe that's the benefit of watching horror movies. It's like I'm not gonna be stupid and go back into a house or go swimming in Loch Ness. I'm just gonna go like hide somewhere, or I would just give myself up to the killer. But, like I don't have 2 hours. You're gonna kill me anyway. I'll just get over it. I'll take this. But yeah, those are all great. I'm excited. Just watched. Was it Spiral? Was yesterday.
I'm curious about that one.
It was very good. It was very. I mean, it is what you think it is. Like when you see the trailer. But there's a lot of good stuff coming out. But yeah, Spiral was very fun. And then, like I said, going back to Texas Chainsaw. I'm always like, as I get older, I'm like, well, I don't want to like watch older things. Because I was like, I want to watch new things. But then, like, yeah, like Texas, like The Changeling I watched recently is still
great. That's a
great
movie.
The Fog was really good again. I was watching it, but yeah.
Is Changeling the Angelina Jolie movie?
Yes. No. That is
it's a John Carpenter that one? Movie. That's got Adrian Barbeau.
Yeah, that's like
He's
one of the
He's still my heart.
Yeah. What is... I know what you're...
There is a movie called Changeling that stars Angelina Jolie.
Oh, yeah, there is one. You're talking directed by Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a horror film.
I thought you were talking about The Fog because that's why I said Adrian Barbeau. No, George C. Scott is in The Changeling, and he is no Adrian Barbeau. But who is?
They redid The Fog. Yeah, I saw that, and I took my sister. She wanted to see it because it has, I think, Tom Welling or something in it.
Yep.
Yeah, and she was like, we need to go see that, and I watched it. I was like, that's fine. It's fine. I will let Tim do his final question that isn't related to Angelina Jolie, I guess.
I mean, it can be. I'm fine with that. I don't know if I can answer it properly, but I'll give it my best shot.
All right, Drew. So if you were hired to write one episode of The Big Bang Theory, what would happen?
I've never seen an entire episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Perfect.
So I would be pretty lost. If I was hired to write an episode of The Big Bang Theory, I would kill them all. I would do it and I would introduce a... gamma irradiated alligator into the plot, and he would slowly pick off all of the characters one by one, devouring them until it was Sheldon was the last one, and he would try to fight it off with his he's the one that's the comic book geek, right?
They all are, but yeah
I think he's like the very stereotypical.
He would be trying to fight the mutant alligator with a foam Thor hammer and a plastic Green Lantern ring, and he would lose his life. Everybody would die. So that's purely not set out of malice, but because I would have no familiar. The real answer, here's the demystifying answer, the world of writing, is if I was hired to write The Big Bang Theory, what I would do is research The Big Bang Theory so I'd actually know what the fuck I was doing. But if they were saying you can do whatever you want, I would not research it and just kill everybody.
I was like, when people say most common response is to kill them in a very interesting way, and it's always like, well, I've never seen a Big Bang episode, and I always wonder, like, I don't know if most of the writers who've watched Big Bang or written for Big Bang Theory have seen it. I mean, I'm not super versed, but go ahead.
I'm gonna let you on a little secret. This is not a secret. Everybody who knows me knows this. I have a very difficult time with sitcoms. I'm not saying that I haven't seen the Big Bang Theory to sound like cool and punk rock or whatever. Like, it's literally because I have terrible anxiety. And it's funny, I can watch horror films all day long and I'll be fine. But if you put on a sitcom like Frasier or something, I will be pins and needles stressed out because, like, I'm just like, why can't people not do the stupid thing? And most sitcoms are based around that. There's a few that I can tolerate. Like, I love Letterkenny. Letterkenny has been my obsession during the time of COVID. But for the most part, I can't deal with sitcoms. Like, they stress me out too much. So, like, it's no malice. I know there's, like, a lot of hipster malice against Big Bang Theory. It's really not rooted in that. I swear. You know, like, if I could, my wife has to watch sitcoms by herself for the most part because of this reason. You know, like, she binge-watched Frasier a while back, and I basically was exiled to our living room for that whole time because, like, I can't deal with it.
I get it. It's almost like an existential horror. We've been watching Difficult People, which is, like, Billy I forget his name. It's like these two comedians, and they're trying to make it, and it's funny, but like every it's very like Seinfeld, Larry David-esque, where everything like comes together at the end and everything goes to shit for these two people, and like that's the joke and that's funny, but I'm always like, why can't things work out for them? What is happening? I'm like, I just want them to make it, and they don't. And every episode, that's the point. But I'm like, I'm getting really annoyed that they're not making it. And my wife's like, that's the point. And I'm like, I know, but they're very funny. I don't understand. So
you mentioned Curb Your Enthusiasm. That show literally makes me want to gargle glass.
Yeah. Well, I think that's like as someone with like social anxiety as well, and very like a almost very like Larry David-esque like interaction with people all the time. It is like, it's humorous and you watch and it's funny and you're like, that's how I feel all the time. But at the same time, like the anxiety like transfers from the TV as well, where you're like, he's like standing behind someone. I always think of the episode where he yells at the woman she's tasting all the ice creams in front of him. And like, it genuinely will give me like an anxiety attack because I've been in that, but like he'll say something, I won't ever say anything, but yeah. I get that. For anyone that wants to find Halloween Man, find out more about you, your podcast, anything like that, what's the best way they could do those things?
Well, as far as Castle of Horror goes, look up Castle Horror on Facebook for weekly updates, or alternately, you can find it on Stitcher, YouTube, iTunes, just about any place that you can find podcasts, it's there. It's also available, I believe, on Bleeding Cool on a weekly basis, if you want to just find it on a website. As far as Halloween Man goes, the best thing you can do is go to Comixology and just search Halloween Man. Outside of the regular series, which we've talked about a lot, there is spinoff books, including the Hack Slash crossover. There's, you know, books about Halloween Man's girlfriend, Lucy. There's a whole world of Halloween Man stuff on Comixology that you can read, and most of it's pretty cheap. You know, like I will say, like I've tried to keep the cost down as much as possible, so like you can really dive in there if you're looking for something to read right now, because I know a lot of us are kind of stuck not being able to socialize very much. Our options are very limited right now, so reading comics is a good way to pass the time. And as I said, I'm always looking for more fans.
Right. I mean, I don't know why you would be, but that's your thing. Well, that's how, like, we are terrible at, we have people on who also do podcasts. I'm always like, oh, they're listing all these things. Tim, we need to do that. We don't do that.
Yeah.
And then it gets to it, and I'm like, oh, I don't know. So we had a guest on one time was like, what's your guys' Instagram? We'll friend you on there. I'm like, oh, Tim, do we have one? I don't know. Because especially with, we joke about all the time, but like comic book podcasts, I don't feel like you stumble upon them. Like, it's not like a true crime podcast where, like, you know, like you might happen to be like looking at another one, you see it, but like if you want to listen to comic books, I'm sure you know how to do it. But so I'm always like, we're terrible at getting fans, but I don't think. But that said, Tim, are you doing stuff? I don't know what you do, Tim.
I'm writing over at Comics Pit. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Maduro.
Yeah, I know that now that you've linked that account, I see Tim tweeting all the time about updates.
Yeah, I'm always shooting out those articles. You got to know who's cast in what movie. It gets the clicks.
And we are on Twitter at pages_panels. Likewise, we're on all those things that Drew so eloquently listed for his. And we have our, if you're listening to this, it will be over, but we have announced our pick for the comic book club pick of the month for October. It will be Halloween themed. We'll be doing another live stream of that, so you can come join us with that. If you find us on Twitter, you can do that. And I figured out how to make a YouTube finally. So all our stuff's on there as well. You can watch September's book club where we talked about Bill Sienkiewicz, Claremont, New Mutants, Demon Bear Saga. That's probably the most I've ever done promoting. I feel a little weird. So I will kick it back to the most important thing is going to pick up a Halloween Man any way you can. Issue 25, like I said, is a fantastic kind of love letter to everything you've done. Like I said, if you read it, you will instantly want to read more. Like it's really nice. It's all on Comicology. I think a bunch of it is on the Unlimited. So if you had signed up for it during kind of COVID to catch up on some books, it's an easy way to do it. But like I said, it's an amazing achievement. So again, congratulations. And thanks so much coming on and talking about it.
No, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
No problem. And that's this episode of Pages and Panels. And next time we will get back to our coverage of George Lopez Show. Thanks so much.